All right, the time is 3 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. It's Friday morning, and a very good morning to you, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. I hope you're doing well, and I'm your host, Lois Achimi, and of course, I'm here again to thank you again for always staying in or staying tuned in this beautiful segment. Now, in this segment, we look at, or we'd rather dive into the important discussion, of course, as usual, and we're looking at economic affairs, trade policy, and of course, entrepreneurship. That's what we give you until the hour of 7:30. But before we give you that, especially when we start with international segment, looking at what is happening within or across the world, especially Africa. Before I give you that, please do connect with us on our social media platform. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course LinkedIn at Eagle FM Namibia, as well as the Village newspaper on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update, and of course the alert about our newspaper. Like today, the newspaper is out. Please do not forget to subscribe and get the newspaper to get also informed these today. And do not also forget rather to download that important app, that is Eagle FM app. We find that on both Google Play and of course the App Store. Of course, again, do download the Imba app on both the Google Play and of course the App Store. And to start off internationally, is that nearly a year after mass protests over tax hikes, many Kenyans are still battling a rising cost of living, now from street vendors. Citizens say government policies have now deepened economic hardship and of course eroded trust. Now with the next election 2 years away, hopes for relief now rest on the promise of a new leadership. You might take a listen to this update.
Central Business District. Life looks like it's moving, but listen closely and you will hear a different story. In the heart of East Africa's economic hub, the wheels are spinning. Just not fast enough for many. The motorcycle taxis or boda bodas are waiting. The shoppers are browsing, but the coins aren't dropping. Business is slow and patience even slower. Christine Naswa has 5 mouths to feed and a vegetable stand by a bus depot. What she doesn't have is a steady profit.
My dear,
it is slow. I can say I do not manage even to feed my children because the living standard is high and my budget is low. My profit is low. Sometimes I don't get anything.
Profit is low. Sometimes I don't get.
There is no slicing the pain of skyrocketing living costs. Naswa's biggest fear? Tomorrow might cost even more.
I'm worried because
if right now life is so high, how about the future? It will be higher than these days.
More higher than these days.
Food truck queues offer a modern twist to street dinner, but even lunch is becoming a luxury. The government says reforms are needed, while citizens say they've had enough.
Yeah, in fact, according to me, it is the government policy. Why? The government is starting taxes in some of the areas whereby we did not use to pay tax. Yeah, so for us, we feel like it is not good.
At just 23, Kennedy has developed a view that mirrors a growing number of young Kenyans, taxed to the bone and tired of promises. Kenya boasts one of Africa's most diversified economies, with thriving agriculture, tourism, and tech sectors. But that is the brochure version. The reality is that around 40% of Kenyans still live in poverty.
Yes, at the moment the economy is not doing good, because if you look, most of the youth of my age, they are jobless. They are jobless, they are hopeless, nothing is going on, there's no projects in the hospitals, there's no drugs, so the economy is not doing well.
And it's not just the economy that has lost value. So has political trust. Shehera, like many others, isn't swallowing what he once believed in anymore.
No, I didn't vote for him. I will not vote for him again. Yeah, yeah. You are going to look for someone who is fresh-minded, someone who cares about the small people down here, and someone who will look into the economy so that it can favor everybody, not only the rich, but also the poor.
The next election is 2 years away, but the ballot whispers have already begun.
All right, there you had it. Now to move on to the next item in Tanzania is that foreign direct investment in Tanzania soared by 46.7% to $2.16 billion in first quarter of 2025, driven by the key sectors like manufacturing, agriculture, and infrastructure. The major projects such as the Mulanzi Agricultural City and, of course, Kibaha Textile Special Economic Zone are boosting industrialization and job creation.
Significant investment surge in early 2025, with 901 registered projects creating more than 200,000 jobs and foreign direct investment jumping 46.7% to $2.1 billion. Major projects include the Mkulazi Agricultural City, a large-scale agricultural investment project located in the Morogoro region of Tanzania, designed to transform the country's agricultural sector through commercial farming and agro-processing, as well as job creation, as well as the Kibaha Texas Special Economic Zone, which are among the country's industrialization efforts. The International Monetary Fund is praising Tanzania's macroeconomic stability, with GDP growth of 5.5% in 2024 and projected at 6% in 2025, driven by export, tourism, and agriculture. However, inflation concerns remain, with food prices rising by 5.3% in January 2025, while the government emphasizes achievements like the Standard Gauge Railway, its flagship railway line project, critics point to income cost gaps, where average salaries cover only 55% of living costs, and political tensions due to opposition exclusion in elections. The ruling party touts economic success, but analysts stress addressing job quality and inflation amid global risk. Daniel.
All right, to move on to the next item is that the Oxfam South Africa is urging the government to take immediate action to safeguard rural community from the escalating impact of climate change. Now, while early warning systems are a vital first step in disaster preparedness, the organization stresses that they are not enough. Now, this comes on the back of devastating floods in the Eastern Cape, where over 50 lives have been lost. We might take a listen.
We now know that 57 people are confirmed to have died. Let's unpack the story further. We're joined by Busisiwe Nyuma. She's Oxfam South Africa's provincial coordinator. Busisiwe, thanks for your time this afternoon. It's incredible that year after year, we see the same disasters unfolding, particularly in the Eastern Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal, with really very little, as far as we can tell, in terms of government's preparedness improving. What are you seeing on the ground?
It's what is happening on the ground is very sad. Government could not immediately come to the rescue of those that were affected. There were people that were hanging over trees and people that were on top of the roofs, but the emergency response did not come on time. As a result, some of the people drowned. So we are facing a very serious situation here in Umtata. Even the disaster relief fund that I think should be in place, I don't think it was in place. People were stranded, but it did come along at some point. People were taken to the community halls. So people are now staying at the community halls, and they are being supported by local NGOs, churches. Oxfam is also on the ground. Thank you.
So having said that, Busisiwe, how would you rate government's response? You've said organizations were not able to get there in time. Many people drowned as a result. So how would Oxfam South Africa rate government's response locally and across the province?
So I think what is the problem is the early warning systems and how difficult it is to reach the people that stay in rural areas. I think for me, government needs to do better on how these messages reach people that are in the rural areas. Not everybody has an access to the television or to the radio. So there must be means that are done to make sure that rural communities get these messages of the weather forecast. So, for example, they can easily work with the councillors and the ward committees to transfer the messages into the communities. In most communities, there's community WhatsApp groups, for example. Those can be used to transfer these messages to save lives. Thank you.
So Oxfam South Africa isn't the only organization that has stressed the fact that rural women, particularly in the Eastern Cape, are vulnerable to climate disasters, the likes of which have been unfolding over the past week. So what do you propose as a way of building resilience in rural communities, but particularly for women farmers?
So I think rural women, more especially farmers, must be included in the decision-making processes, because you can't talk about the, for example, women and the small-scale farmers without them. So their voices are very much important in these decisions. So they must be included, so that whatever is the policy at the end of the day, it's an inclusive policy. Rural voices are there.
Do you feel, Busi Siwa, just in the work that you have done as Oxfam South Africa, that we're focusing enough on how these climate change disasters impact rural communities much more than the rest of the country, and how it continues to increase the issues of inequality in South Africa?
Definitely. It does increase the issues of inequality. Remember, the rural communities have a problem of the infrastructure. So when these disasters hit, it hits them very hard. So if government can look into the infrastructure in the rural areas, I am 100% sure that things will be different by now. So it's a matter of making sure that the finances are earmarked or are channeled mostly to the rural communities.
Yeah. And as someone working directly with these affected communities.
All right. There you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the Mozambique's ambassador to China, Maria Mustafa, said her country sees the China-Africa economy and trade export as a vital platform to promote export and attract Chinese investment. Now she highlighted opportunities for deeper cooperation in technology transfer, job creation, of course, infrastructure development.
Talking to us on CGT and Ambassador. Well, the Expo is one of the most important economic and trade events between China and Africa. So how is Mozambique participating in the Expo, and what are your expectations?
So Mozambique is going to participate with a very high level delegation and with the business delegation. This is an opportunity for us to showcase our main sectors, to cooperate more with the business people here in China, and also to establish ties to promote trade and to attend more investment. And I believe that this time we're going to open new avenues that we can do more together for economic integration between our two countries.
Trade between China and Africa hit a record high of $296 billion in 2024. And China has also remained Africa's largest trading partner for 16 consecutive years. So, Ambassador, how would you evaluate their economic and trade cooperation in promoting modernization across the African continent?
Through this, the trade, Africa is benefiting because we are getting the transfer of technology. We are getting part of this globalized world for the new era of digital world. So through the trade and through the investment, the Chinese company that they are working in our countries, they are bringing the technology. They are bringing the good thing for our country. So also this is really a beneficial for our country to have the Chinese bringing their knowledge, their funds, and their technology. And also we have our side that we provide the minerals also we provide, so which creating also a job for us and solving the instabilities that maybe we can have in our country. So it's a huge contribution. And we believe that trade openings of Africa also will benefit more. But we need to work more on the connectivity within the African country. We have to develop the joint infrastructure that can also benefit more, not only for the African country, but for the China, because through this connectivity, you enter Mozambique and you can go to other countries. So if there is no connectivity here, so things, they may not move well. So we have to work more on infrastructure and bringing the countries together and for
All right. Now, in South Africa, is that South African macadamia farmers are expanding production to meet a rising global demand. However, concerns loom over proposed U.S. tariffs, which could affect also access to key market and impedant earnings. Now, while auto tariff is currently paused, farmers are exploring alternatives like India to safeguard future exports. You might take a listen.
Bought in the picturesque Madibo Valley in Limpopo with his personal savings. 2 decades on, he has expanded his plantation and has produced 25 tons of macadamia nuts this year, ready for the export market.
As a farmer, our core focus is on primary production, and then we get our nut to our drying and dehusking facility. We do our preliminary quality tests. After that, what happens is that on an annual basis, the export factories that are within our area, they typically give a price offer because they've got direct links with the customer, with the buyer.
He plans to further increase acreage and output, riding on the ever-increasing global demand. However, Trump's drive to impose higher tariffs could impact access to macadamia farmers' second biggest market.
I'd always find myself, or we'd always want to find ourselves, trading in low tariff markets, meaning that, you know, it's money back into the farmers' pockets. The moment there's a 30% trade tariff, I think the figure I saw a few weeks back was that if Trump had to activate the 30% tariff, then we'd be paying close to 460 million rand worth of tariff at 30%. That's what a tariff means. That's half a billion rand out of our economy into the tariff.
Other South African farmers groups have also warned of potential devastation from the U.S. tariffs. Citrus growers, whose annual export to the U.S. average $100 million, have warned that tariffs could hurt South African citrus farms and could potentially affect 35,000 jobs.
It's a non-starter to probably think that a decision through America will hinder my plans. I feel that there's so much more we can do internationally or explore other markets. I mean, India has got 1.5 billion people that are also looking for macadamia. So there's always an alternative plan, but I trust that specifically with the U.S., I think that will be a matter that will be dealt with. And
all right. Now, to move on to the next item is that President Cyril Ramaphosa says South Africa will now use the G7 summit in Canada starting tomorrow to push the African agenda for just energy transition. Now, the president has reiterated that just energy transition on the continent will happen at the pace and, of course, scale conducive to Africa's developmental conditions. Now, on that, Ramaphosa was addressing the third Africa Green Hydrogen Summit. We might take a lesson to this subject.
It's G20 presidency to advocate for the developmental needs of the continent.
During its G20 presidency, as you heard, South Africa has chosen to prioritize just energy transitions as engines of economic growth and social development. We will be proceeding to Canada to attend the G7 in just a few days. And this is the message that we will be projecting to the leaders of the G7, that our remit, our objective with our G20, South Africa's G20, is to focus precisely on issues of energy.
The aim of this summit is to explore opportunities offered by green hydrogen. It's estimated that Africa should be able to produce between 30 and 60 million tons of green hydrogen by 2050. Ramaphosa says the Africa Green Alliance must ensure that there is regional certification schemes for green hydrogen projects.
We must continue to move as a continent to develop regional certification schemes, hydrogen corridors, and green product export platforms. And this requires that we should work together. We should be able to make this alliance truly alive.
Locally, there are also other feasibility studies to explore white hydrogen.
Now, early commercial exploration for naturally occurring white hydrogen is underway in the provinces of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. If white hydrogen is proven to be available and commercially extractable, this will provide a further source of clean hydrogen.
Government also used the occasion to launch the South African Renewable Energy Master Plan, SAREM.
SAREM is not just a roadmap for expanding renewable energy generation. It is a blueprint for how to industrialize through energy, developed through a rigorous social compacting process between government, industry, labor, and civil society. It sets clear targets for localization, supplier development, skills transfer, and green economy investment attraction.
The Western Cape says it is working with the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape on exploring green hydrogen.
Here in the Western Cape, we're also playing our part. We already 2,000 megawatts into our own plans here in our municipalities across the province. And if we don't get water and energy right, we can't create the investment climate that we all need and that green hydrogen needs to take us forward.
The summit ends on Friday.
All right, there you had it. Now, a group of young Somalia diplomats are recently joined in China, gathered on the power of dialogue and, of course, mutual respect. Now, the forum highlighted the deep-rooted friendship between Somalia and China, emphasizing the importance of cultural exchange for global cooperation.
Community in marking the inaugural International Day for Dialogue Among Civilizations, a day set aside by the United Nations to promote cross-cultural understanding, adopted unanimously at the 78th session of the UN General Assembly and co-sponsored by China and 82 other nations. The resolution signifies a united call to build bridges between cultures and civilizations. Among those marking the day were 20 young Somali diplomats who recently returned from a diplomatic exchange program. Gathered in Mogadishu, they tuned into a virtual address by Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, eager to hear his message on this landmark occasion.
Africa's development challenges are formidable but not insurmountable. Through a strategic partnership like that between China and Africa and a commitment to sustainable and inclusive development, we can transform these challenges into opportunities, and Somalia, with its rich heritage and resource and resilient people, is poised to embark on this transformative journey.
Drawing from their international experiences, the diplomats emphasized the role of cultural exchange in promoting peace, understanding, and mutual respect.
We, the 20 young Somali diplomats who walk in the streets of Beijing and Hainan, we're not only observing history, we're preparing the shape of it. And what we saw was clear: the friendship between Somalia and China is deep, dignified, and ready for renewal. This is the relationship between rooted in trust, dating back to Somalia, early recognition of the People's Republic of China. It has withstood the test of time and distance. But now a new chapter is a beginning, a chapter written by the youth, shaped in a vision and guided by a mutual respect. We witnessed how diplomacy today goes beyond the emphasis on official meeting. It happened in classrooms, in digital labs, in cultural exchange, and in climate action. And all of this, the youth must lead not from the sidelines, but from the front.
Chinese President Xi Jinping's Global Civilization Initiative calls for respecting diverse paths of development, upholding shared human values, and deepening international cooperation and cultural exchange.
Last year, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the resolution proposed by China and co-sponsored by 83 countries, including Somalia, to establish the important day of International Day on, for dialogue among civilizations. Actually, it's also a part of the our efforts to implement the Global Civilization Initiative proposed by President Xi Jinping. You know, for this initiative, together with the Global Security Initiative, Global Development Initiative, these are the contributions of China to the international community for improving the global governance and enhance the mutual understandings between civilizations and among the various countries.
To strengthen the bond of civilization and dialogue day between the two countries, China will embark on establishment of a Chinese language institute at Somali National University later this year.
The launching of the language program teaching Chinese in Somalia for the first time in history. It will be launched in the coming October. We have been coordinating very well.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
All right, the time is 30 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that Agriculture Minister John Steenhuisen has reassured South Africans that local-produced red meat remains safe for consumption despite the challenges posed by the ongoing food and mouth disease outbreak. Now, we might take a listen to this particular update.
Your foot and mouth, as we know, doesn't affect human beings, does affect their health of animals, though. What is the minister saying?
Well, what we do know from the keynote address by Minister Steenhuisen this morning here in Somerset West, with the red meat industry together with stakeholders, is that they have not received any reports of the disease outbreak in two provinces, being the Western Cape, including the Northern Cape. But with that being said, indicated that they are working with the sector, the industry itself, to assist them with this particular outbreak. Also communicating government support and plans in assisting not only the industry to grow, but also to sustain it. I am now joined by Andy Wright of ATK Products, a supplier to the meat industry. Andy, I understand that the conference is currently underway. This is an annual conference, but talk to us about the role that you play as an organization in the broader scheme of the red meat sector.
Well, we are a South African-based company, the only one. The other two are mainly the Americans, and we've been part of this now for nearly 20 years. Our biggest goal is, you know, to give more back to South Africa and to achieve more for the smaller guys and keep the funds and the money in South Africa.
There is quite a drive in focusing on the global market, but let's zone in on the smaller scale farmers. How are you assisting them, particularly in the red meat sector?
We are quite busy with smaller farmers, especially the local ones, not only in our country, but in neighboring countries where They have like the actual slaughter block where they actually just do a few cattle a day. We also are busy with local BE partners which supply the local market. So we give them a good platform to go and sell their product, you know, in South Africa and that.
We can't ignore some of the challenges that the industry has faced. As a supplier to the meat industry, how have you assisted some of these, the industry itself, possibly in the past year?
Well, foot and mouth disease has always been a keynote that we have to address. And we have worked with government recently to try and get a module like a mobile abattoir where we could go into an area without them moving the cattle too far. We could actually slaughter the cattle, but we're still working on that.
And
all right, you had just lastly on the international segment is that the mining production in South Africa experienced a decline of 7.7% in April 2025 compared to the same month the previous year. Now, this marks the sixth consecutive month of decreasing production within the sector, according to the data from Stats South Africa. Now, the main contributors to this decline were platinum group metals, that is, and gold and coal. We might have listen to this one.
Of platinum group metals fell by 24.1%, while gold production decreased by 2.5% and coal by 1.7%. On a monthly basis, production increased from March to April. However, on a quarterly basis, it saw a downturn. Despite the latest decline, Fahima Adia, senior equity analyst at Momentum Investments, offers an optimistic perspective on the outlook for the sector.
Weaker, but that was primarily because of PGM miners cutting back on production due to the weaker PGM basket price, in the past year. But we've really seen that turn around. I mean, if you look at the PGM price now, it's up almost 42% year to date. So I think that's definitely positive. We'll probably see PGM miners start to produce again there. The higher gold price has also been very positive for our gold miners. And going forward, I think, you know, there's quite a positive outlook for our mining industry if we can get some of our issues correct, you know, related to electricity constraints and also Transnet. A lot of the metals in our mining industry are critical for the just energy transition. So I think there is definitely a positive outlook for our miners.
Additionally, iron ore has emerged as a positive contributor with a 5.3% increase in production. Mineral sales overall rose by 0.7%, significantly bolstered by gold, which recorded sales increase of 57.6%. Diabo Seton, SABC News, Johannesburg.
All right, the time is 36 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Stay tuned.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikao shafasana na longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandisoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma kono raheta tuimwe. Datundatu heari hamano tano o niari. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have...
All right, the time is 37 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. And if you just joined us right now, a very good morning to you. And welcome to the early morning scoop. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, for those that have been with me ever since 6, thank you for staying tuned. Now, to move on, rather to start locally, is that we're starting with one of our lead story today. Please do not forget to subscribe and get the newspaper and read through, please. And just to stay informed. And how do you do that? You just subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, or you send through your details to 081-241-444, 081-241-444. That's the number you need to save for you to get the newspaper. Every day is released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, to start here is that a simple dimension of the burden of proof of safety on the consumption of genetical modified maize, that is GMO maize, turned into a major trade dispute between the two North American neighbors, Mexico and the United States of America. Now, Tim Wise, a researcher in the agri-food industry, observed and spoke in a virtual presentation and stakeholder engagement on what Africa can learn from Mexico stance and resistance on imported genetical modified food and, of course, agricultural produce from their Mexico neighbor. Now, Wise commented on the dispute that the Americans did not recognize the claim made by the Mexican counterpart that the maize imports were bad for American consumption. Now, the scientific donza on the scientific effect of the genetical modified produce or agricultural products to human consumption might well be the most comprehensive evidence on risk on human health and, of course, the environment, that what Wise explained. Now, Wise noted that the Mexican insisted that the burden of proof is something that the Americans should also justify when selling it to another market. Now, the U.S. failed to provide any such evidence, and there is ample evidence on GM maize and it's also other residue to justify the precautionary policies that the Mexican produced, that what he said. Now, the dispute led to a panel of trade arbitrators deciding the direction of the dispute between the two neighbors in December 2024. Now, Wise indicated also that the panel set the evidence aside and ruled in favor of the USA. Now, according to the panel, Mexico had not carried out any appropriate risk assessment based on the relevant international scientific principle. Now, this led to the signing into the law on 17 March 2025 by the current Mexican president and the ban on cultivating GM maize in the country. And please, for more, or rather for the full story, please do not forget to subscribe to the newspaper and get the full article there. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the executive director of Wazesha Vocational College, Agustinius Ngobe, delivered a heartfelt and visionary speech during the official groundbreaking ceremony for the institution's new campus in Tumweneni, Kavango East region. Now, addressing local residents, official and invited guest Ngobe reflected on the college journey from the concept to reality, highlighting the resilience of the team and shareholders who supported the vision from its inception in 2022. Now, from the very beginning, it was not easy and it still won't be, that what Ngobe said, and but also our decision is to build this campus in Tumweneni is deliberately and deeply also symbolic. The name Tumweneni means to be silent and recover from a damage. Now, while Wazensha means to empower, this community is full of opportunity for the empowerment. Now, he emphasized the importance of community collaboration in complementing government efforts to expand education and, of course, training. And this project is also about more than just a building. It's about giving hope to young people who might have a lost direction. That's what he said. Nana Ngobe also acknowledged the growing international ties of Wazesha, particularly with Notre Dame University in the United States, which recently sent 5 exchange students to Namibia. You are not just reading history, or you are witnessing it. When you come back in 10 years, you will also be able to testify the transformation. That's what also he said. Now, the executive director also paid a tribute to individuals who inspired and of course supported his leadership journey, including two women he credited with giving him the courage to leave his comfortable job and pursue this calling. He further thanked Fled, who a key supporter in planning and of course developing the courage version. Now looking ahead, Gobe called on the community to protect the courage and of course contribute to its growth. This school is for all the children who felt hopeless. It is also their school. It is our school. Let us not destroy it, but work together and make it work. Now on this, we might take a listen to what he has to say more on this particular courage.
As we leave today, they'll start clearing the land, and there are people who are already working on putting up the water tank, and they will put up the toilets and shelters for making things. So construction have begun. We do not have a sum total to say this is the amount that we have. But for us to be able to construct the institution that we want in full, we need round about 10 to 20 million to construct it. Because what we have realized is that most of the private TVETs are poorly equipped compared to the government. And the government is already complaining that most of their equipments are outdated. They need to upgrade. So for us to be able to then amplify that, we need to get the new technology that will enable us to do that. So we are starting.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 4 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 900 grams Bakomo Wheat Bix whole grain wheat biscuits. Only 45 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Rama Original 70% fat spread. Just 25 Namibian dollars each. 4 kg Real Good IQF mixed chicken portions. Only 175 Namibian dollars. 2 liter Coca-Cola Original Taste less sugar soft drinks. Just 16 Namibian dollars each. Don't miss out. This weekend only. Get up to 50% off. Valid until 16 June 2025. Only at ShopRite.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
So we do it per project. The first project will be to just save the area, have the shelter that will start the bricks, have water available and the toilet. And then in the next phase, we'll then put up the workshops. And then the workshops will then be the one which will allow us to open up the college. At the moment, we are having an MOU with the South African Vocational School, and we can send our students for trade tests before we have all the infrastructures. So with the agreement with Global Care Trust, I think we can do so many things before we have all the things that we need in the area. And looking at the African community which the college will serve, Angola is our neighboring country. If you go to Kalai now, there are no proper facilities. So we've been talks to ensure that we can export our skills transfer and skills development using this institution. So we have the shareholders who are in South Africa. So those who would be willing to come and study in Namibia, they can come from South Africa to come here. We will be in talks with Kenya. And we can have exchange programs with the Kenyan institutions. So this is a vision which is long term. But at the beginning, we must first serve the community and then see how best we will be able to make a difference. And then we can expand it to the other regional and continental places.
What courses is Wezesha Vocational College trying to offer to the students that are going to be at the college itself?
We'll not reinvent the wheel. The wheel will remain the same, but we'll do it differently. So when we enroll the students, we don't enroll them as artisans. We enroll them as entrepreneurs, where we teach them business in either plumbing or bricklaying, and they have to have financial knowledge from year one to the last. If in 3 years they can learn entrepreneurship, practice entrepreneurship, financial management and marketing, by the time they are done, they can have an option to say, I'm going to work for someone, or I can start my business, because they have been doing it for the rest of their course. And there will be a research center where the universities like Notre Dame can be able to assist us craft the short program, which will be integrated into the traditional courses. In conclusion,
all right, there you have it. The time is 48 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that Tate Diamond, an investment holding company headquartered in Windhoek, is on a mission to become a fully vertical integrated Namibian's own diamond company, operating internationally among other leading diamond companies. Now, in January 2023, Tate Diamond was selected to be part of Namibian's diamond trading company enterprise development program, leading a notable milestones such as the formation of Tate Jewels, the polished jewelry and distribution arm in Toronto and US. Now it has also expanded its footprint to the international stage with the opening of its also new flagship showroom in Antarctica and United States. Now, my colleague Patrick Moshela Lukolo engaged with our in-house economist, that's Menwa Rasu Stewart, discuss this for us. You might take a listen.
Looking back to our morning scoop, we are looking at the Tate Diamond, a full Namibian-owned diamond company, has expanded its footprint to the national stage with the opening of its new flagship showroom in the Atlantic United States. This milestone marks a significant achievement of the Namibian diamond industry, showcasing local craftsmanship and entrepreneurship in the global local market. The launch represented not only a business triumph, but also a step forward in promoting Namibian value-added exports and strengthening the country's presence in the international trade. More on this, we are going to be speaking to Nina Menavali Erastus, who is going to update us more on this. Mr. Nina Mena, how do you experience this, or how do you see this as a value addition to our economy?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for the question. We have to understand context is very important in this regard, or when it comes to these things. Mm-hmm. And remember, diamond is one of the Namibian old mine routes. Mm-hmm. Diamond is one of Namibia old mine route that we've been mining for decades now.
Yes.
And if you look at what the country, what we wanted to achieve, is the beneficiation of our resources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is the beneficiation of our resources.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that we always wanted to add value.
Mm-hmm.
We always wanted to add value, to derive more value from what we have. Instead of it just, we get it from the ground and we send it.
Mm-hmm.
And we send it. That is what we do not want. So we always wanted that, okay, we get our minerals. We process them here, or we turn them into finished product.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the main, that, okay, if it's diamond, what do we use diamond for? No, we use diamond to create jewelries for industrial use and others. So what can we perhaps produce from diamond here in Namibia, what we call processing? So we have to cut them, we have to polish them, and we have to cut them here.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if you look at Tate Diamond or Tate Diamond, however it is,
mm-hmm.
it's a Namibian company. We call them site holders.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that this company was started in Namibia as a site holder, meaning it's one of those companies that when our diamond come from the ocean or come from Orange Moons,
mm-hmm.
they get to the sender where we call NTTC, and they get to be sorted and they are valued and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tate Diamond is one of the companies that buy local diamonds. Now, what they did is that instead of just buying this local diamonds or these rocks, and we polish them and they cut them,
they have also now gone an extra mile in terms of value addition to say we are going to add value in terms of creating masterpieces or craftsmanship or jewelry or some or bracelet from diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why now they have opened that showroom in it's in Atlanta, right?
Yes, it's in Atlanta, USA.
Yeah. So that is how they, that's why they opened. So they opened that showroom to show the value added the product from Namibian diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And in a nutshell, that is the value. We wanted always to create the finished product from our resources or natural resources.
Okay.
And now somebody did. They are not only getting the diamond and polish and cut them, but they also went now an extra mile to create the finished product from the diamond. And that is the value we have always been trying to get from our natural resources. So that's how important it is.
Okay. It is very important to Namibia. However, is it creating jobs for the Namibian people?
Now, you have now to understand this. Diamonds don't leave Namibia until they are polished, until they are cut, mm-hmm. until they are valued.
Mm-hmm.
So before they go to Atlanta, where they are now going to be turned into pieces, or perhaps even those pieces are being done in Namibia, it means now that is diamond have to buy, or take the diamond, have to buy more diamond from NDP, so from Namibian government,
mm-hmm.
then he employ more people to polish, he employ more people to cut, and he employ more designers.
Mm-hmm.
The showroom is to show finished product made from Namibian diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
So the employment will be created here where it starts from the cutting, from the polishing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the jewelries and for everything that is going to make it, that is going to show at Atlanta, it has to be made from polished and from cut diamonds that are and that process being done in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the employment, that is the value again.
Yes. Are there any other plain sources diamonds exclusively from Namibia, from Atlanta, in the showroom?
Okay, good. Now that is a good question. As I said at the beginning.
Yeah.
That the Tatis Diamond is a Namibian site holder, it's a Namibian company,
mm-hmm.
started to buy rough diamond from NDTC.
Mm-hmm.
So they already buy from Namibia.
Namibia.
And if the showroom was created to sell there, the showroom is like a market.
Mm-hmm.
So it's where you sell your thing as a product, but the diamond are from Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a site holder registered here. And it has been created through the NTDC development program for them to buy rough diamonds from them.
Okay.
So meaning if the showroom start to do well, more people are buying the product. And of course, I'm sure 30 diamonds, they will buy more rough diamond from Namibia.
And this way, other minerals here in Namibia will be benefiting from this.
And in that way, what we say, mineral beneficiation. Beneficiation is just value addition to the minerals.
Mm-hmm.
In such a way, more of our raw material are going to be turned into finished product.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more you sell finished product, the more it's going to buy rough diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you buy rough diamonds, the more it's creating employment for people to polish, for people to cut, for people to sort,
mm-hmm.
and for people to turn them into finish the product.
Okay. Before we close off, Mr. Nginomenwa, is there any other information maybe that you wanna give to the youth out there, or to other business people, or to our government regarding this?
Look, you have to understand the process. As I said, Tatis Diamond was created under a program, an NDTC program,
mm-hmm.
that enabled them to be a site holder.
Yes.
So that's why everything started. So you have a young person, or you have a person who was determined, who had been in the diamond industry,
mm-hmm.
and he decided that, okay, cool, I wanted to add value to the diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't do it alone. I need assistance.
Okay.
And that's when now NDTC came in to say, we're going to put you through our program, and we teach you, and we guide you, and we connect you. And that's how they end up creating their own program. Now he's employing, I think, more than 10 people. He has invested more than a number of millions in Namibian, in infrastructure where the diamond are polished.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it started from somewhere, meaning that you cannot do some of this high-level value addition alone. You need your government to come through. Mm-hmm. And government came through NDTC because NDTC is partially owned by government and the beers.
Okay.
So you see, you need government to be involved at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
If we are going to do things like that, like that is a Namibian dude. The diamonds are Namibian. His factories are in here. He buy a diamond from NDTC.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to be able to cultivate such a value chain to your minerals, government need to step up. But first, of course, it needs some determined young people, a young person, whoever, to step up first.
Mm-hmm.
Then certain corporate and certain policymakers. So it's a combination of things. Young people, they can be determined. Young people, they can be strong. Young people, they can be willing.
Mm-hmm.
But until the policy of the environment is conducive, and their government is willing to come through with different assistance,
mm-hmm.
then things will not materialize. So definitely it will require government participation and also young people being determined to step up and also certain corporate to be willing to come through.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was nice having you. That was Sangina Minma Valley. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, the time is 59 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock and it's early morning scoop. So now there you heard it from our in-house economist, Ngina Menwa Erasus, speaking about the Tete Diamond, whereby he said that this one is what the Namibian country wanted. I've been wanting to add value by turning the diamond into the finished product. And of course, he said that, I mean, us having the Tete Diamond in Atlanta, or them creating a showroom in Atlanta, is also an achievement. And when he was asked about the question of if now this Tete Diamond is also creating employment in the country, of course, he said that creating employment, of course, diamond does not leave the country without being polished, and that he said all that is work or labor done in the country. Now, to move on to the next item, listeners, is that yesterday, the executive director of the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, Ben Nangope, signed a service level agreement with the regional electricity distributors in Namibia for 2025 to 2026 electrification initiative program. Now during the ceremony, Nangope noted that the ministry is committed, or the commitment, toward the electrification of more than 200,000 households by 2030, reaching 70% electrification nationwide. Now, the entities in the agreement include Arongo Red, Sinored, Oshakati Premier Electric, and the Environmental Investment Fund. Now, to achieve this, the government allocate funds to different distributors. And just to go through here is that with the city of Windhoek signed for a total amount of $30 million, which he said last year they executed a similar agreement connecting over 800 homes with a $15 million allocation, mainly in peri-urban areas. And Sinored will now receive $20 million for household electrification, and of course an additional $16 million for major upgrade at the Tsunkwe and Gam solar hybrid stations. Now, Arongo Red signed for $20 million, and Nored is allocated $30 million, and Oshakati Premier Electric joined for the first time as an implementing partner this year. They are allocated an amount of $7 million. And in the south, the IUOB Red is allocated $12 million, supported by both in kind and financial contribution from the local authority. Now, on that, my colleague Patty Moshela Lukolo bring us this update.
Good morning, David Shombe.
Yes, good morning, Patema. How are you?
I am good. How are you today?
I'm well.
Okay, yesterday you attended to the signing service level agreement between the Ministry of Mines and Energy and electrical distributors. What was it all about?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you to our dear listeners. Yes, yesterday the Executive Director of the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, that is Ben Nangombe, signed service level agreement with different electricity distributor or regional electricity distributors in Namibia, just to make sure that they keep that commitment of working together in order to make sure that by 2030 they distribute electricity to more than 200,000 households in Namibia, and also that is equit to 70% of electrification in Namibia. It was quite a short event. Mm-hmm. But the content of the event, what Mr. Ben Nangombe said, that electricity is something which is needed by everybody. Yeah, that's why it must be a must for all Namibians to have access to electricity. And these institutions, these regional distribution, institutions that are known as REDS, they were given money. Mm-hmm. They were given money in order to make sure that they implement those projects within their sectors. And what is also maybe to note down some of the institutions which were present at that signing of the service-level agreement. You talk about NORED, you talk about SINORED, you talk about ERONGORED. There is also Shakati Premier. There is also Environmental Investment Fund. And there was also a presence of officials from NamPower. And just to make sure that there is a commitment in terms of realizing the implementation of that electrification plan, because indeed the ministry cannot implement those plans alone. You need somebody to assist you in terms of implementation of those, plans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, despite them distributing or wanting to distribute this across Namibia, we still stand at that point where electricity is still being high. What have they said about this when electricity still goes high?
Yes, Patema, you are correct. When you look in SADC region, Namibia is number one in terms of expensiveness of electricity in SADC region. And just in May, when we attended the press briefing by electrical or electricity control board, the CEO indicated that he saw concern about continuation of increment of electricity price in Namibia. And I've asked a question to the ED, who stated that yes, electricity continued to be high in Namibia or to be expensive, and there are some measures that they put in place in order to make sure that Namibia is able to produce affordable electricity. But one of the things that he mentioned is that there are talks between the government of Angola and Namibia in order to make sure that they work together in terms of getting electricity from other countries. And interestingly, they really did not talk about direct internal program, like the aspect of nuclear, where a lot of people are talking about nuclear. But what is stated is that for now, mm-hmm. there are talks with the Angolan government in order to make sure that, they come up with better ways of having electricity in Namibia at an affordable price, mm-hmm. and so that everybody can be able to afford electricity. And one thing that was mentioned is also subsidy, which was indicated especially to old age pensioners, because mm-hmm. When you are buying electricity and you are from that category of pensioner, there is a little bit of special treatment that you get, mm-hmm. so that you will not really buy it like any other ordinary person. Those are some of the few things that that were stated. But overall, it's a plan to electrify Namibia. And that question that you have asked is still a question which is in a lot of people's mind, to say, why are you connecting me to electricity that I cannot afford?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing to give me access to electricity. It's another thing for me to have enough money so that I can maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, David, for having you.
Thank you, Patema. Have a good morning.
Right, it's 7 minutes in the of six, seven, 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Oshakati Premier Electric and Electricity Contribution in the north, mostly for Oshakati Town, has asked for a 4.19% increase in electricity tariffs. Now, this proposal was made open to residents and of course, other stakeholders for a discussion. Now, the OPEs, or rather the Oshakati Premier Electric tariff increase is aimed at the financial year of 2025 to 2026. Now, the distributor executive manager of office, Bino Shehama, outlined the reasons behind this proposed increase, saying that the total cost of purchasing electricity from NamPower is projected to 250.4 million Namibian dollars, and increase from 232.9 million Namibian dollars in the 2024 to 2025 financial year. Now, this rise is caused in attributing to the approved NamPower tariff increase of 3.8% and developments in place to generate power. Now, he explained that the power supplied to the public is sourced from NamPower, which also in turn import electricity also from Zambia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. And in addition to the cost of purchasing electricity, a chief executive officer, Nelson Shear, mentioned plans to expand electrification to areas such as Evruluko, Extension 14, Onawa, and Othingo. Now, Shear also highlighted the higher cost associated with electrifying new areas. He acknowledged the government's support in funding the electrification of Evruluko for the very first time. Now, there is a pressing need to enhance our electricity generation capability and operate our business more sustainably, that what Shea stated. Now, regarding new developments in electricity generation, Shea announced the recent groundbreaking of a 5-megawatt solar plant, which also will be operational soon, along with plans for another 5-megawatt solar facility to ensure compliance with NamPower procurement of 65 to 70% of their needs. Now, on that, Pinyas Mutota, executive for economic and market regulation at the Electricity Control Board, clarified that the proposed 4.19% tariff increase by OPE has not yet been approved for by the ECB. Now, he explained that the board will first assess the proposal and the feedback from residents before making a final decision. When questioned about the strategy for approving a tariff increase, Mudota explained that importing electricity from countries such as Zambia and Zimbabwe could a significant cost, as it is also purchased in US dollars, which becomes expensive when it's converted to Namibian dollars. Now, that distributing power across our country requires resources, including labor cost. We consider all those factors when evaluating tariff increases, ensuring that the process remains transparent. That's what he said. Now, residents of Oshakati experience a dysfunction now with the rising electricity costs, attributing them to higher wages for employees of Brastatals. And now they called for a review of employees' eliminations within various Brastatals. Now, acknowledging those concerns, Munota recognized that that consumers find electricity pricing burdensome. However, he emphasized that if tariffs are not met, it could also impact distribution capabilities. Now, regarding wage increase at the Prastatals, Mutota affirmed that the board would analyze proposed tariffs alongside salary adjustments and ensuring that any increase are justified. Now, to help reduce electricity costs, Mutota revealed that the government is planning to establish more power plants within the country, which are expected to produce to provide less expensive electricity compared to the imports. Now, projects are already underway, including plants in Chumab, Rudres, and Roshpina, out of which are government initiatives aimed at lowering tariffs. And although this might take a bit of time, that what he explained. Now, Mudota also urged the public to use electricity responsibly, as it is also a valuable resource that significantly cost to deliver. Now, entrepreneur Pavo Mohammed Shikongo voiced concern about the OPE's proposed tariff increase, indicating that electricity play a critical role in daily business operations. Now, while we also understand the necessity for the increase, the proposed 4.19 increase percent seems excessive. And of course, I urge the ECB to evaluate it carefully. Any increase should be reasonable. We also recognize that without adjustments, OPE could struggle to generate necessary power. That what he said, or he also further suggested that OPE should also factor in the challenges that are also faced by the consumers. Now, on that regard, we might take a little short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the another item on this segment. Thank you so much.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I Madina Omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro nirandi thoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konora heta tuimwe. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my cut.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 4 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like 800 grams Nescafe Ricoffee Instant Coffee Refill. Only $99. 10 kg Top Score Super Maize Meal. Just $118. 8 Twin Saver 1-ply Toilet Rolls. Only $45 per pack. 36, 42, 45, 50, 68, or 76 Pampers Disposable Nappies. Or 35, 40, 46, or 52 pants. $179 per pack. Don't miss out. This weekend only. Get up to 50% off. Valid until 16 June 2025. Only at ShopRite.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
All right, ShopRite Live Read. Get all your essential products for just $99 only at USAFE. Now, that include 1 kilogram of Lice King and 1 kilogram of Top Score or rather Bokomo Super Maize Meal, a super kilogram bag Sugar King, white or rather brown sugar, 750 milliliter Brent sunflower seed oil, and 50 grams of pasta Polana or rather Pasta King, and just pay $99 only up to Sunday 22nd of June 2025. You save. Yes, we all save at You Save.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I Madina Omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisa mwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro nirandi thoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimu.
All right, it's 16 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the certain parts of Namibia can reach extremely lower temperatures in winter, which can also kill many plants and vegetables, crops. Now, frost does not necessarily occur in freezing temperatures. It can only occur between 0 and 2 degrees Celsius. Now, here are few, or rather, we will take a lesson listen to a few strategies to protect your plant from frost this winter. Now on this, my colleague Apate Moshala Lukolo engaged with Emily Abraham, a horticulture manager from the Namibian Agronomic Board, to discuss by shedding more light on this particular subject. You might take a listen.
Looking back to our morning scoop, we are looking onto the weather that is busy affecting our crops. Okay, so it states that as we are facing this winter time, frost is also occurring in plains, which is typically found in cold and humidity areas such as valleys or coastal regions. It occurs vertically every year across southern and in the agricultural regions, which may lead to damage or even death, especially in the sensitive plains. So today we are going to be speaking to Emilia Abraham, who is a farmer, and she is going to tell us more when it comes to winter. Miss Emilia, what have you experienced, or what have you seen into crops as we are experiencing this weather?
Yes, thank you so much, Fatima. Maybe just to start by, in fact, good morning to all Eagle FM listeners, and thank you for having me mm-hmm. on this platform this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe to highlight that the crops, just like they're similar to how us human beings or animals, we have what we call optimal temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Optimal temperature, meaning that there is a favorable temperature where a crop can thrive very well without any hindrance or something, any growth hindrance.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at now the crops, you see that the average or the moderate optimal temperature for crops is range between 21 degrees Celsius to 29, depending on the crop, whether that particular crop it's a cool season crop. Mm-hmm. Or it's basically a summer crop. So it actually differs.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes now to frost,
mm-hmm.
frost basically it's when now the temperature is too cold
mm-hmm.
such that even the crop itself cannot resist it.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that it even damages the cell of the crop, and it won't even function so well. And some crops, even some bigger trees, you find that they will even end up dying because it's just too cold.
Mm-hmm.
The same way if someone take you and put you in the fridge, for example, you won't actually function. Eventually it will give you some hours and then you will die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same because a tree, a crop is a living organism
mm-hmm.
and it has, in it, it's supposed to have at least to thrive in a favorable or in an optimal temperature. And that is what is happening now, maybe just coming to the sector.
Mm-hmm.
We are receiving a lot of reports from the farmers
mm-hmm.
Going through a lot, experiencing some losses,
mm-hmm.
especially in the past 2 days. I think it was really cold temperature was too heavy on the crops,
mm-hmm.
and hence really the damage for the crops, especially for us now from the horticulture perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big loss because then you'll be pushed to import a lot of the crops that you're supposed to buy or to source locally. But because of frost,
mm-hmm.
then obviously it really impacts our June production forecasting and also production volume availability.
Okay, speaking of those crops, particularly which crops are those that are really being affected?
Yeah, I want to be specific. Look, for example, when the temperature is too cold,
mm-hmm.
even those crops that do well or thrive so well during cold weather conditions,
mm-hmm.
they might also as well be damaged because
mm-hmm.
look, anything of too much can actually cause damage.
Mm-hmm.
So do you understand? So that's
mm-hmm.
why we talk about, even for example, if you talk about the tomatoes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Those farmers that have planted tomatoes, you find that they are really, really suffering and struggling a lot because
mm-hmm.
Tomato, by its nature, it's a hot worshiper crop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crop that you would want to grow during summer season. But because of now the technology and innovation where people are coming up or breeders are coming up with seeds or varieties that can be grown throughout, of the herb, sometimes you can say, okay, I can grow it under shade. You find that some farmers are growing it throughout the year, and hence, if the frost is very serious, you find that their plants are heavily damaged because of too low temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. Yes, even the mango, so we have quite a lot of crops that you find that can be damaged,
mm-hmm.
and hence, that is the seriousness of the cold weather or frost.
Okay, probably now that the plants are all just being affected this way, do we have any hope? Will these plants be able to show some sign of life again, or we are just going to restart?
Yeah, some of the crops will recuperate depending on the size of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the trees, if they are bigger, mm-hmm. or the crops, they are matured, you find that they will recuperate after the cold weather subsides,
mm-hmm.
but if you find the infant plants or crops,
mm-hmm.
they might actually not survive at all. And that's why you see that part of the challenges that you need to observe as a farmer,
mm-hmm.
it's actually frost.
Mm-hmm.
And some farmers, they even have some traditional mechanism to fight it. I'm not sure whether it works or not.
Mm-hmm.
You find that they put the winter melons surrounding the crop,
mm-hmm.
so that when the frost comes, then you find that apparently it helps.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's serious, like for the past 2 days, I tell you, even the fully mature trees, they can die.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's why you find that even the crops such as, for example, bananas, those that are very, very sensitive to frost,
mm-hmm.
even the potatoes crop that are very sensitive to the crops, I can tell you they can die, and that now the resurrection of those crops would depend on the stage of the crop.
Mm-hmm. So apart yes. from those traditional ways that now people use to help these plants to not get frost, is there no other methods that we can use to protect these plants?
There is some method, especially there is also some chemicals that farmers used to apply.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it was proven that when it's too serious, again, it might not work at all.
Mm-hmm.
There is also another technique that you can use is to cover your crops, for example, in shade nets.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see that those crops that are under protected environment, they mm-hmm. don't actually experience the same the same damage as compared to those ones that are in the open. So frost is likely to damage the crops that are on the open as compared to those ones that are in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think my advice is that, especially if farmers are planting, targeting to supply their crops or to harvest during winter,
mm-hmm.
I really strongly recommend that crops such as, for example, your tomatoes mm-hmm. and those that are really sensitive to frost,
mm-hmm.
it's a good idea that you should plant when you have a protected environment, maybe a shade netting
mm-hmm.
or a greenhouse where you are growing them. Because greenhouse, then the temperature is being regulated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have such, I think it's better that you plant more of the crops that are cold worshippers, because for them they are able to survive as compared to those crops that you forced to plant in that season.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Emilia, how about those plants that were already ready to be harvested, maybe like potatoes and so on, that are already ready to be harvested? Can they also still be affected by this frost?
The damage might not be too strong.
Okay.
Because remember that during harvest, you do not really want, you are not looking forward for the crop to grow or for further development.
Mm-hmm.
You are just basically maintaining your crop
mm-hmm.
such that that particular crop it maintain the yield such that at least the time that when you are ready to pick up your crops, then you can actually pick it up. So you don't need further development. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So the extreme of the damage might not be the same as for the crop that is about to initiate flowers mm-hmm. or the crop that is at the fruit development.
Mm-hmm.
So, your produce might be a little bit damaged, maybe especially the one on the side,
mm-hmm.
but you will still harvest something,
okay.
although the harvest might not be as significant as you expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, Ms. Emilia, before we just close off, what advice can you tell other farmers or what ways that you can tell them maybe to keep out or on the look so that they can just protect their plants from this weather?
My advice, Patema, is just that, as usual, I want to encourage the farmers to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Because the techniques that I'm talking about here, I've learned from farmers.
Mm-hmm.
When we visit them, you find that this farmer is planting certain crops traditionally that is believed to block frost.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, when you go to the other one, you also do or implement another techniques which is proven to work.
Mm-hmm.
So one would actually think that if we can harmonize some of these strategies and also share the ideas to say, okay, I've implemented this last season and it worked for me very well, so can't you also employ this? I think we'll be able to assist each other. Because surprisingly, we find that some farmers are hard hit by frost and some are not. Although I acknowledge the fact that some areas are not really hard hit by frost as compared to the other, because it depends on the number of frost days that that particular area receives. You find that some areas, such as, for example, the south,
mm-hmm.
even the sheep can actually die because of frost.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the north central, actually, they have zero frost days, meaning that frost can come, but not too serious.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to encourage the farmers, especially in the same production zone,
mm-hmm.
where they have the similar challenges, to start sharing ideas and hold each other arms, because it will not help anything that you have a good looking tomato during frost time and the other person is struggling to harvest the tomato because we do not share the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to hold hands. We need a lot of people to be engaged in farming.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to lose them because they are discouraged because of those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, poverty or food insufficiency is almost like war. I like to use that example to say, mm-hmm. you cannot be the only foot soldier running around in the bush,
mm-hmm.
Shooting people. You won't be able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then you need other counterparts that can help you. And through working as a team, I think we'll be able to manage. And Namibia will be able to see itself standing on its feet, be able to supply abundance of food,
mm-hmm.
to its consumer throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe just also another encouragement, word of encouragement to say,
mm-hmm.
Frost, I mean, years differ. You don't need to be discouraged because you are hard hit by frost, because next year might not be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So please keep pushing,
mm-hmm.
keep planting, keep keeping on,
mm-hmm.
because the fruits that we are seeing on the shop or vegetables we are seeing on the shops,
mm-hmm.
whether they are coming from other countries or whether they are coming from within,
mm-hmm.
they are also from farmers like you who are trying to push. And hence, I want to encourage farmers that don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
And they always say that apparently farming is not for how do they call it? Is it fainting heart or something?
Yeah.
They have a word that they normally say. It's not for people who can easily faint and give up.
Uh-huh. It's not for the soft-hearted people. Yeah, you need to be soft-hearted very strong.
People. Uh-huh. You need to be very strong. Uh-huh. And mind you, and every industry has its own challenge.
Very true.
And this, I want just to tell you that farming is still lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
You must still see it the way you saw it when you first started.
Mm-hmm.
You must still be inspired the way you were first inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And instead for you to quit, rather start thinking of how you should innovate next time for you to be able to thrive and mitigate frost.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is my word.
Thank you very much. That was Emilia Abraham. Thank you very much.
It's all right, Fatima, and you can have a blessed day ahead.
Same to you.
All right. The time is 31 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock. Thank you so much for staying attuned to on this segment that is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much. And there you heard it from Amelie, just really emphasizing that at least the farmers should also work together and share also knowledgeable methods to survive during this particular season. Thank you so much. And from me, Lois Ashimi, it's a good day. Please do enjoy your weekend. Thank you so much.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, The Eye. The Eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, Rio Sherero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, The Eye.
Omudiha utekiru wakaguna ii Madina Omjo. Chikao shafaa sana nana longe shifaa ya eshiwike moshi wana. Iye moya o, ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifaa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito ma yoe, yonge shifaa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tu imemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, The Eye.